right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It's 38 degrees and partly cloudy here in upstate New York. A big change from 2 days ago at 66, and I think yesterday was in the 50s. 38, and I am seeing they're predicting some sprinkly snow by this weekend. But not too bad. At least there isn't a foot. It is December 16th in New York, and I can't be complaining. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Digital Puppets, Face Director, and AI Self-Editing Cameras, if you remember those things. I don't even remember what they called them. They weren't the GoPro. They were the... I don't remember. It's so hard for me this early in the morning. Grava, I think they were. Grava! Decide for me what moments are important for you to be recording during my life, my 24/7 augmented memory that's recording to be uploaded to the cloud. What was even scarier, though, than I thought, than that self-editing video were those... impersonation tools that they were touting is so wonderful for like the movie industry to be able to mimic your emotions just from images that they could collect anywhere, like, oh, I don't know, around on the internet, and then make a 3D rendered model that can be puppeteered from a distance electronically, and we can make you say things. And that was very, very scary. Anybody, anywhere, at some point could be impersonated just with the amount of data that is available out on the internet for people to collect. You know, they were showing how they take the facial recognition software, and actually in this case they were just using images, but then they were pinning like the corners of the mouths and the eyes up, and the software itself then did the interpolation and was able to determine how that person would like move their face and make expressions when they talked. So it was frightening. If you didn't see that, make sure you catch the notes for the show in the archive. UCY.TV. No, YouTube.com/UCYTV. And then Before the First Cup is the playlist. Hey, speaking of which, I have been dragging for, oh, I don't know, I've had this Facebook page for 3 years now for Before the First Cup. And guys, come on, I'm at 97 subscribers. And I am still, for 3 years, I can't even get 100 subscribers for the show. I mean, talk about like motivation to get up in the morning. Somebody help me knock it for 2016 over 100, please. I need 3 more likes for my page. Facebook.com/BeforeTheFirstCup. Really easy to get there, but just makes me depressed. I mean, my reach is great because I have all these pages I can share stuff on, but I only have 97 people who come to visit me every once in a while. All right. So we ended up the show yesterday talking about a series of unfortunate tech predictions. Artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things are inseparable. And that was out of Forbes. I thought it was pretty significant because Forbes is, you know, mainstream New York City, big money, rich people read it. I mean, I'm sure that some of my friends who think I'm a bit lunatic would probably read Forbes and go, oh, Forbes said it. So I pay attention to Forbes. Don't always agree with what they say, but at least I pay attention. And they're talking about the unfortunate future tech predictions. Wow, sounds like they got Jewel an interview. So we didn't make it very far in the story yesterday, and I really would like to continue here. Oh, man, something with the weather being a little warmer, and hopefully now when it gets colder. We have all been suffering from allergies again for the last couple days. And I doubt it's the pollen. I would probably guess about this time everything's kind of wet and mushy and decomposing. So I would probably guess it's mold, which I do have mold. Last time I went for tests, it was mold allergies. But hopefully this will be over soon. Second we get snow, it'll be all gone. Everyone will be breathing easy. All right. Anyway, a series of unfortunate tech predictions, artificial intelligence, and the Internet of Things are inseparable. Now, one of the things that I saw they made the mistake of is that in the title of the Internet of Things, they made the IoT all capitalized. But just like in the DOD for Department of Defense, they are not all capitalized because of is a little tiny word. Well, the Internet of Things, the of is not capitalized either. It's a little tiny O. I hate when I see that, when they make it like a full-blown acronym, but it looks even cooler when the O's are small. Gets people's attention. All right, we went through some bullet points yesterday. It says, we have been thinking about the Internet of Things. I should give someone a Cupid doll if they could give me a definition without peeking. All wrong. So why? And they never explain how they were thinking of it before. Like, this is going to be a little happy world. No, this isn't going to be all happy. Or maybe they weren't thinking of it in regards to dollars. I've seen the dollars. This is why it's so dangerous. This is the next cash cow. This is the next hop on your surfboard and ride it into the ground for probably the next decade. Invest your money in all these little rinky-dink startups like the billionaires are doing, because I'm telling you what, this is disruptive technology beyond what we have ever seen before. We've been thinking about the Internet of Things all wrong. Bullet point number one, big data analytics for the Internet of Things. Software revenues will experience strong growth, reaching $81 billion by 2022. Smart cities. Remember, they talked about Honeywell. Those are all the smart building technologies. And Google's in on the game now as well with Nest and some of their other products. Smart cities will use 1.6 billion connected Internet of Things in 2016, according to Gartner. By 2025, the Internet of Things will be a $1.6 trillion opportunity in healthcare. Yes, precision medicine and the 21st Century Cures Act. Of course, $1.6 trillion. You see why they're so damn excited? Why all of Congress is getting on board, and those giddy legislators, I don't even remember who they were, but we watched that 21st Century Care Act video, and they were like literally giggling and just about falling over each other, talking about how wonderful it is that we're going to cut out the FDA for this new mad science gone mad medical device and pharmaceutical approval, and we're just going to prey on the dead and dying and do case studies just like the tech industry, who told us we could make $1.6 trillion if we just go with it. You know, so they could do a case study after the fact instead of front end approval, because you know what? That's keeping all of these miraculous magical cures out of the hands of Americans. Number four, 50 billion connected devices will exist by 2020, says good old Cisco, and they would know. Data number six, data capture by the Internet of Things connected devices will top 1.6 zettabytes in 2020. And I forgot to look if peta or zeta was bigger, but I'm pretty certain that zeta is bigger. And number seven, there are 10 major factions fighting to become the interoperating standard for the Internet of Things. And I don't know. I mean, I think it would be pretty easy. We already have operating standards between all of our wireless capable devices and USB devices. I don't really think that there needs to be new rocket science invented. Use similar, maybe next version connectivity that's all backward compatible to what we have now. And poof, there you go. No, you know, new postulates needed. Or fights on an international stage for the next 4 years. and making people buy things that end up then having to be flash upgraded because they're not compatible. It's pretty annoying. Get your shit together, tech companies. All right, let's go back here now. Numbers, numbers, numbers. If the predictions are to be believed, there is no way that current analytical solutions will be able to manage that level of information across the size of the connected landscape. And, you know, something I didn't mention yesterday when we were looking at this, but don't think that the Internet of Things is not going to be helping the NSA. If anybody watched the circus last night, it was called the GOP debate. And I have to say, even though it's always a circus, I can kick back here. I put it on full screen on my computer and watch it and chuckle to myself when it starts to look like, you know, Saturday night WWF wrestling. A lot of those guys, and I would have to say the majority of them, I think the only one who didn't call for killing and war was Rand Paul. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Carson didn't either. Carson usually isn't violent. Just weird, but not violent. But all the rest of them were talking about ISIS and, of course, how they're under every bed and they're in every closet. And holy crap, if we don't start bombing people, they're going to be on our soil. And the only way to keep us safe, they asked a question about Trump. I think they started it with Trump about shutting his comment about shutting down the internet. And did he really mean that? And does he realize what the implications are? And then they passed that along to three or four of the other candidates. And the one thing that came out of that question, out of all of them, was more surveillance, more surveillance. And one thing I was really surprised about, just because every time, and here's actually two things I was really surprised about. One, my friend telling me that Cruz is a libertarian. I was like, what? I mean, learn something new every day. Cruz did not ever come off to me as a libertarian. Cruz sure as hell looks like any other warmonger I've ever seen. And with that rehearsed facial expressions, like he sits in the bathroom every morning for an hour in front of the mirror and mouths his speech to himself to get his, you know, staring into the distance with glazed eyes look perfect, you know, when he's doing that. I don't know. So, yeah, Cruz is a libertarian. Surprise. I guess they're war hawks, too. I was just surprised that he was a libertarian. But secondly, Cruz voted against the NDAA, we found out on stage last night. And that was pretty interesting as well, because the NDAA, of course, opened up all of these other things, like being able to spread propaganda on the American people, as well as being able to kill or not kill American citizens with drone bombs and all of the spying that's going on. So one of the things, though, that all the candidates talked about just about, except for, again, Rand Paul, I did not hear that. I don't know if Carson did or not, but was expanding the spying capability. And they all said, well, you know, yeah, but we can spy on the terrorists. We're not spying on you. We're just spying on the guys that are doing things that we think are dangerous. Everything that I was hearing there was making me feel way more uncomfortable than it was making me feel safe. And I mean, here's the thing. How is the subjectivity as to what is dangerous and what is not? Who's making the decisions as to who's on that list? You know, this new Obama's backdoor tippy-toe gun control, with looking at the no-fly list, which I think I saw, there's over 450 or 700,000 people. There was a large number of people on that list. But shouldn't you be able to see you're on that list and provide documentation to prove that that isn't you and that you shouldn't be on that list? Shouldn't everyone that's on that list get a letter in the mail saying, excuse me, we have determined that these six events and this chat and this Skype thing that you did with your friends, all connected here in your cloud account with the NSA, all have put you on the red list. Please provide documentation. Just like when you upload a video to YouTube and you got to do like a whole legal runaround to be able to prove you own the rights to whatever they decided to tag you on for copyright. Yeah, just like that. Please provide approval, documentation, to show that none of these accusations are true, and we will remove you off the red list. Boop, boop, boop. I don't know. I think there should be a process like that. If they're going to start using these secret lists to identify, surveil, and attack people, then we should at least get a warning that we're under investigation for something that maybe we didn't even do, something that was totally misinterpreted. I mean, I don't know. You know, large beers, large craft beers are called bombers. So every time I'm typing about a new bomber, I don't get a lot of new bombers, but every once in a while I do. And there's conversations about bombers. And I'm like, wow, I just typed the four-letter B word, though with an er at the end, but a four-letter B word probably 12 times tonight. I'm sure that this chat is going to be snapped and stuck into my file. You know, artificial intelligence found a bomb. All right, back here anyway. So one of the things that, and they all talked about it, Trump outlined it pretty specifically. He's going to get his tech buddies in Silicon Valley to figure out how to infiltrate all the bad guys and take them down. Now, that's what they're already doing, except it's not corporate America. It's the federal government, the DOD, the Cyber Patrol Center, under the NSA. Good old Keith Alexander's divisions. But don't forget that very quietly, good old Billy Gates, who's slid into the seat to help for a little while when he gets bored of his philanthropic projects of eugenics, they are running the Microsoft Cyber Patrol Center, working with all the governments of the world to track down cybercrime. So, don't think that there weren't a few ears perking up at that debate, and there probably aren't already a few conversations going on. Everybody upgrade to Windows 10! Remember how hard they pushed that? Yes, upgrade to Windows 10. Windows 10, the biggest spying software we've ever put out. All right, anyway, numbers. There's no way that the current analytical solutions we have out there right now will be ever able to keep up with the Internet of Things and trillions of zettabytes, 1.6 zettabytes of data in just the next 2015, we got 2 weeks left. So 4 years and 2 weeks, we've reached that level. And like I said, if they really are surveilling like we've been led to believe through any of the WikiLeaks that have come out and the Snowden revelations, they're already at that point. Maybe targeted. They're like, oh, person of interest, look, we have a dossier. Oh, let's dig into it. Yeah, look at them. We're going to go through all this stuff manually. But they have no way currently with analytics, and it means they need better algorithms, people, to be able to scan all the data they collect on a daily basis with artificial intelligence and find keywords, key phrases, key whatever suspicious information that they set to be a trigger. They need something to scan that and then alert. And remind me, that actually made me think of two things, and it's already Wednesday, so hold on. We're gonna do a little bit of music. Do 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 do. Here it is. Do do do. All right. It just reminded me, speaking of systems and surveilling, DARPA put out a story. I found them on Facebook, so I subscribed to them. And I'm like, oh, man, they probably see me now. But whatever. I subscribed to them on Twitter, too, and went, pfft. DARPA released a story yesterday about their new sentry to protect the power grid. Yes. Remember that power grid that they warned us? Oh, it was so fragile. We just have an EMP or those damn hackers. Those damn hackers with their, SCADA. SCADA virus on a USB drive, right? We didn't invent that with Israel and let it go in Iran. No! Yes, those pesky hackers with those utility viruses. We're going to make sure that they don't affect us here. All right, anyway, back to the mistake of the Internet of Things by Forbes. You know, we read a lot of this yesterday, so we're going to go to page 2 in a second here. It says, of course, no singular platform needs to be able to process all of the information, but all the solutions in the immediate future will require artificial intelligence capabilities. Well, of course they will. Our puny little human brains cannot deal with that much data. We get confused. This means that SAP, and I don't know any of you ever invested in tech stocks back in the 90s or after the big bubble in the 2000s when everything was cheap again, you will recognize some of these companies, SAP, Oracle, IBM, and Cisco. And of course, all the rest who also have analytics platforms will have to invest in AI research. And we mentioned yesterday, Toyota with their $1 billion investment in Silicon Valley. So we know it's going to be big. I mean, Toyota's not going to be dumping $1 billion, right? And we've had 3 or 4 stories now over the last just week or so of large organizations or billionaires dumping $1 billion here and $1 billion there. But that means something. That's like slapping the red chip down on the craps table. All right. Or if you don't get into artificial intelligence, guess what? You're going to risk being left behind. Well, we can't have that. But these dinosaurs, and these, we're talking dinosaurs, IBM, SAP, Cisco. And, you know, we did a story about the new CEO of Cisco back a few months ago, and that's exactly what he had said. We're getting out of the hardware business. We're getting into artificial intelligence. And I told you, Cisco owns about 90% of the global internet backbone as far as their products with their name on it and their operating systems. That means Cisco is probably one of the companies that could easily get data intelligence out of what packets are traversing between what country or what IP address to what IP address. Anyway, so now we have Google and Facebook and Apple, and they're working together and separately with all these other processor companies to integrate analytics capabilities. And like we've talked about with the Internet of Things and wearable computing, ubiquitous computing, remember, it's just going to keep getting smaller and smaller. And we're going to forget that it's there. And that is the key. We read that story about in the next 5 years, which amazing. This is, you know, 2020 they're talking about. Within the next 5 years, our cell phone's going to be gone too. Because it'll all be integrated into our stuff. And yes, that's where we have enchanted objects. They're all smart and they can communicate with us, interact. Yeah. Facebook recently announced that its Parse project, and I need to look that one up, P-A-R-S-E, which is its major push into the Internet of Things, has been expanded with a new SDK, we mentioned that yesterday, software development kit, for Silicon Valley vendors like Broadcom, Intel, Texas Instruments, and Amtel to be able to integrate connectivity with integrated circuits. And with Facebook intending to funnel the interaction of data between devices and the devices and people, this expands the amount of data available for any AI project to use in understanding behavioral patterns and ultimately govern and control the Internet of Things. Now, also, they talk about Facebook and behavioral patterns. You know, we've learned now that they've been using Facebook for quite a while as sociological experiments. And I had read even before that was announced, there were a few times now with like the rainbow flag Avatar, and everyone just jumps on board to support gay marriage, and then it was to support France, and then it was, you know, I mean, these are dumb experiments that are going on, but they've given access to our data to some of these universities to be utilizing in real-time studies of sociological and psychological reactions to things. So they've also been watching, like, when they release a news story, I don't remember what the story was, but there were already a couple times where they'd release something to see what the reactions would be of the populace and how much they'd share it and, you know, what happens down the road. So I don't know. I don't trust any of this stuff. Don't trust any of it. And now we can't even trust whether or not what we're seeing or what we're hearing or what we're interacting with is even the real thing or the real person. You know, yesterday with crossing this border between reality and fantasy where we're almost hitting that Turing test of not being able to tell the difference of a simulated reality from the real. And now with these 3D puppet electronic whatever they are, I don't even know, automatron faces, and to be able to change facial expressions and make them interact the way you want. I'm just saying, I mean, I absolutely see in the future for the safety of the leaders of our nation that they won't have to show up in person anymore and be standing there ripe for a sniper. No, they can be in their green screen room or not and be giving a speech or not, or an AI speech of some kind. But we won't ever know if they're real anymore. I told you, I saw that in a sci-fi movie once, and I was like, whoa, that's pretty scary. And here we are already creating these quote-unquote avatars that could be utilized this way. All right. Anyway, let's see if page two has anything I care to share with you. Otherwise, we will move on to bigger and better things. Oh, this talks about algorithms and artificial intelligence. All right, so maybe we'll hit this one. These will all be things that you guys know. Oh, this is good. It talks about the cloud connection. All right, page two of a series of unfortunate tech predictions. Artificial intelligence and the Internet of Things are inseparable. Continued from page one, an algorithm is a self-contained, step-by-step set of operations to be performed. Algorithms exist that perform calculations, data processing, and automated reasoning. And automated reasoning is an area of computer science and mathematical logic dedicated to understanding different aspects of reasoning. The study of automated reasoning helps produce computer programs that allow computers to reason completely or nearly completely automatically, although automated reasoning is considered a subfield of artificial intelligence. Right, and that's where the killer robots live. We did the show on killer robots a few days ago. And this ability to reason through things without human intervention and come up with a conclusion is one of the things that's very disturbing, and it should be to all of us. Because as we allow these machines to make decisions without human intervention, they start learning. And that's the problem. And we also found out now that they're talking about programming these things with the ability to say no, just in case they find an error in their human programming. And we should be very concerned about that, because when you start getting a smart-ass computer, it's going to argue with you like a 9-year-old and tell you all the reasons, all the excuses why they shouldn't have to do it right now. We definitely have an issue. Even Gartner, at their recent IT expo in Orlando, spoke of algorithms during a keynote as the future of digital business. But it doesn't go far enough to manage, govern, and ultimately create new opportunities, new business models, and new customer experiences. I don't know if you guys remember, probably was the summer just whizzed by, and we've been doing shows, probably try to do them every day. So I'd have to say maybe 3-4+ months ago in shows, I told you guys it's all about the algorithm. The algorithm is what gives a machine its quote-unquote intelligence. The algorithm is what sets the commands that gets it scanning the database to find the keywords or find the triggers that then's going to put you on a list. That's the algorithm. Making sense of all the data about how customers behave and what connected things can tell an organization will require algorithms to define business processes and create a differentiated customer experience. Oh, blah, 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 blah. I used to have to do all this stuff. I mean, it's just, of course, they're looking at this from the business perspective. Like, how is this going to help your business? But they're not looking at it from, like, how is this going to help you spy on everything? It's all the same stuff. It's watching behavioral patterns. So whether we're looking at a consumer's behavior or we're looking at an insurgent's behavior, we are still monitoring behavior. Algorithms will evaluate suppliers. It'll define how cars operate and even determine the right mix of drugs for a patient. Yes, and your implantable. That's sending data via Bluetooth to your phone, to your doctor. And in a purely digital world, agents will act independently based on our algorithms in the cloud. Yes, that is the next step to your personal digital assistant that's going to know everything about you. The problem for the Internet of Things and managing the amount of data from people and devices is that we are left in the hands of a branch or subset of AI rather than the intelligence itself. What is AI, you ask? Well, I'm glad you did. Artificial intelligence is the intelligence exhibited by machines or software. It is also the name of an academic field of study which studies how to create computers and computer software that are capable of intelligent behavior. I'm glad Forbes has gone to the dictionary, looked all this stuff up. Make sure you're staying on track in this article there, Forbes. Major AI research and textbooks define this field as, quote, the study and design of intelligent agents, in which an intelligent agent is a system that perceives its environment and takes actions that maximize its chances of success. Well, that's kind of a weak definition, but we kind of get it. I think we've talked about it enough. We understand what agents are. It's part of the algorithm. They go out and they fetch your information. That's what it is. And it's not really an agent. It's not like a little a little one and a zero with legs that runs around. An agent is like what I have running already for my DARPA emails that I get every day. I have an agent set in Google, and I say, fetch me anything that appears on the internet in your scrapes that is DARPA in the title every day, and do what with it? Oh, email it to me. And every day, my DARPA agent within Google goes out and searches all the DARPA stuff, puts it in a nice, neat email, and then shoots it to me every night at like 12:24 a.m. I get an email from Google that goes, bing, today's DARPA email. So that's an agent. By investing in artificial intelligence rather than stopping short at machine learning platforms and algorithms, remember, an algorithm is a self-contained and therefore can, by definition, never be intelligent or truly adaptive to its environment to maximize successes. Well, that's true. I mean, an algorithm is like, think of the algorithm as the code. So the code itself isn't intelligent. The code is just telling it how to work. But then once it starts working and indexing and using your algorithm to collect information, then you garner what they used to call the quote-unquote BI, the business intelligence, out of the data that you were collecting and putting into the database. But now, with algorithms that they're running, they can run queries and collect all kinds of data for all kinds of different metrics and then put some intelligence to that with the applications. You know, and once we start now having machines that they can then program, well, when you find this and when you find that, then you do this, you know, and there's an A plus B equals C, then we start having strings or patterns of events that can be orchestrated. Like the old school of web services just now multiplied. Will organizations in the world of the Internet of Things realize the full potential of this? Even the current darling of analytics, predictive analytics, just isn't enough to harness the information deluge. Providing basic automated actions within processes based on correlations. Well, hey, we got all these applications we've been building here for years. And I'll tell you what, I've already been doing this stuff. I mean, since the early 2000s, when we first started to mess with RSS feeds, I mean, I can slice and dice data any way you want. And I can find out anything. You know, just give me the tools. Give me something to sniff for, little bloodhound, and go. I'm good at what I do. I've been doing this a long time. I just need the energy. That's the problem. And I really don't care about most of it anymore. I just like to rest. That's what I need is a vacation. All right, let's finish this story because this is getting boring. It says, without AI, so without AI, we fall at risk to the relevance paradox. The relevance paradox occurs because people and organizations seek only information that they perceive as relevant to them. However, there may be information in its widest sense, data perspective, general truths, etc., that is not perceived as relevant because the information seeker does not already have it, and its relevance only becomes apparent after it has acquired it. Thus, the information seeker is trapped in a paradox. Well, they're not if they decide that everyone is a potential threat. So now we just sweep and collect everything from everybody and put it into a database. And then later when we run our analytics against it, we can determine what's relevant and what's not. I mean, that's pretty much what the NSA has decided to do. Just take it all and then we'll deal with it later. In an Internet of Things context, and at the mercy of algorithms and machine learning, the paradox can be rewritten as the relevance paradox occurs because algorithms seek only information that it perceives as relevant to it. Because ultimately, humans are writing the code, and therefore we are still interpreting what is relevant and what is not in the algorithm itself. You know, I mean, here's the thing. The people who are writing this software are just writing code. They are not the thinkers. You need then a business person who has lots of forward-looking vision. I mean, that's kind of what I've always done. I have my developer, and I figure out what data we need, how we're going to get it. I draw the diagrams, how the data flows, and then how I want it presented in the end user interface and what it is scraping and how it is going to slice and dice it. And that takes skill. Not collecting the data. Collecting the data is easy. Being able to then take what data you have and present it in a meaningful format that actually then allows you to draw conclusions based upon what you're seeing takes skill. And especially when you're pulling that data from unformatted, untraditional sources, you need to be able to connect the dots first, ding, 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 to then be able to paint the whole landscape. And I think that's what it is. It's that connecting dot capability that gives you that insight. But see, right now, what's pissing them off is right now, AI still has trouble with that. I don't think it will forever. I think they're teaching it to connect the dots I was talking about one of Kurzweil's projects that's been going on for a while to be able to scrape all the unformatted text on the internet and then determine the context and the meaning of words based upon the context around it. See, that's more of a connecting the dots. That's teaching it higher level thinking. Thinking outside of the box without direct red arrows pointing from point A to point B. You got to kind of be able to use your brain and go, oh, I get it now. All right. I don't know. This was a really long story that really didn't tell us anything that we didn't already know. I mean, I guess the 1.6 zettabytes was something I didn't know by 2020. But, yeah, Forbes is pretty mainstream. And I don't know if I really feel like reading any more of this. So it says, anyway, only by investing in artificial intelligence, rather than stopping short of machine learning platforms and algorithms, will organizations and the world of Internet of Things realize its full potential. And even current darlings of analytics, which is predictive analytics, and yes, they're using that. That's the pre-crime stuff right now. Just isn't enough to harness the information deluge, providing basic automated actions within processes based on correlation. Well, I don't know about that. I mean, that's a start. Anyway, it's better than what we had. So anyway, let's move on to the next story. So that was kind of a good thing we spent 42 minutes on it. All right, DARPA. Good old DARPA. And this is from DARPA.mil. DARPA, exploring ways to protect the nation's electrical grid from, cyber attacks. Yay! I wonder, and actually DARPA Dan is gone, so this must be somebody beyond DARPA Dan. But remember, we had talked about the Sentry. They were already working with DARPA Dan on the Internet Sentry that was going to scan the perimeter and be able to search and destroy just by any type of anomalous behavior. And we had talked about that a while ago. They don't need definitions anymore. They just need anomalous behavior, and then they can mark it as something suspicious. Across the United States, 3,200 separate organizations own and operate electrical infrastructure. The widely dispersed nature of the nation's electrical grid and associated control systems has a number of advantages, including a reduced risk that any single accident or attack could create widespread failure from which it might take weeks to recover. Now, if anyone's ever looked into what might happen if we ever really had a massive EMP here in 2015, you will know that if there was major damage to any of the large transformers, I don't remember what the number was, but there were only so many of those big honking core transformers across the country, and it takes a really long time to produce them. And if all the electricity was out, it would take even a longer time to produce them. And there's only a few of them sitting around waiting for a major outage because they're very expensive. You would know that their story here about it might take a few weeks from a widespread failure to come back from. It could be way longer than that. Anyway, back to the story. Since the late 1990s, however, cost pressures have driven the integration of conventional information technologies into these independent industrial control systems. And yes, it's not just in these industrial control systems. I mean, since the late 1990s, I've been a part of it. Merging data with everything. We put connections to the cloud, to the internet, to the backbone, into everything. Because you know what? That's the way you had to do it. Isolated systems cost way too much money. But I'm telling you something that we discovered that apparently these assholes didn't figure out is that anything that's mission critical, like your power infrastructure, like, a hospital with all of your machines running statistics and your people sitting in intensive care. Yes, those types of areas should be a standalone, independent, no connection to the internet network. Because otherwise, they could be hacked. The internet was never built with security in mind. Anyway, since the late 1990s, cost pressures have driven the integration of conventional information technologies into these independent industrial control systems, resulting in a grid that is increasingly vulnerable to cyber attack, either through direct connection to the internet or via direct interfaces to utility IT systems. although utilities are increasingly focused on their cyber defense needs. And the thing is, like, think about it. If you had, like, an electricity producer, and I've been to a few, I don't know if I've been to electricity, but I've been to gas. I've been to a few large gas facilities because they do pump gas up here. We have lots of natural gas. I have a few friends that work there. We had some customers that were in the gas industry. So I've been inside the buildings. And there are all these industrial machines. And guess what? They're all running stats and statistics. They're running reports. And they're all connected to a network. Now, I don't know if they're connected to the internet necessarily. But all the machines within a facility are at least connected to each other back to some sort of central point. And then once you get to that central point, who the hell knows what they do? I might have an internet connection plugged into the same router right on the, you know, port 2 next to port 1 that's plugged into all the automation system for all my machines in the factory. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're doing, but it is a big problem. And a lot of these people in manufacturing, or in this case, large electricity production, they just don't have any idea on how to properly network things. So this whole big cyber attack, and this could have been fixed long ago. I would say this is a massive failure on the part of our federal government to pull, and they're public utilities. That should have been taken care of first and foremost, especially after we had cyber attacks in other countries, wink, up their nuclear systems. Although utilities are increasingly focusing on their cyber defense needs, the process of identifying, purchasing, and installing commercial host defensive technologies across the industry may take many, many years. In an effort to address the cyber threat to the country's electrical grid within a shorter time frame, oh, good old DARPA, released today, which was 12/14/2015, so 2 days ago, a broad agency announcement detailing research aims for the early detection of cyber attacks to the power grid infrastructure and seeking ways to reduce the time required to restore power. The ultimate goal of the program, known as the Rapid Attack Detection, Isolation, and Characterization System, more affectionately known as RADICS, R-A-D-I-C-S, is to develop automated systems that would help cyber and utility engineers restore power within 7 days of an attack that overwhelms the recovery capabilities of the power providers. If a well-coordinated cyber attack on the nation's power grid were to occur today, the time it would take to restore power would pose daunting national security challenges, says John Evert, DARPA's program manager. And beyond the severe domestic impacts, including economic and human costs, prolonged disruption of the grid would hamper military mobilization and logistics, impairing the government's ability to project force and pursue solutions to international crises. So that, of course, is why DARPA is justifying getting in on trying to protect with a Skynet the power grid. I bet they were going to integrate some sort of artificial intelligence, is what it sounds like to me. An early warning capability for power suppliers could prevent an attack entirely or blunt its effects, such as damage to the equipment. But the vast scale of the nation's electrical infrastructure means that some number of systems are likely to be in an abnormal state at any given time, and it can be difficult to distinguish between routine outages and an actual attack. Well, ding, that's where we need it to be smart. RADICS looks to develop advanced anomaly detection systems. Now, I've talked about them already. We used this 15 years back on big core networks. It's called intrusion detection systems. You could run it in software, but if it was a large organization, you probably want to run it on a card so it would have its own processor and memory in your core router, but it would be inspecting any traffic that would be moving across the network for anomalous behavior. That's exactly how it works. So you didn't need a virus definition anymore, let's say, to determine that you were infected because, oh, look, we have these packets that are trying to access the processor directly. They're trying to access Core Zero. They're trying to access places where they don't have permission. And that looks suspicious to me. It's like somebody trying to jimmy a door down a back hallway somewhere. If you had a motion detector and there wasn't supposed to be anyone in there, beep, 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 the alarm goes off. Well, it's pretty much the same thing. Anomaly detection systems with high sensitivity and low false positive rates based on analyses of the power grid's dynamics. Well, good, because you know what? The power grid dynamics, again, is behavior monitoring. Yes, are we starting to see some common themes here? Behavior monitoring is how they're also, like we talked about the road rage car thing. Johnny, you're getting a little angry. They start monitoring your behavior, your facial expressions, your blood pressure. We also saw for that GoPro GraviCam thing where AI self-edits your daily video that you're taking 24/7. Oh, the battery only lasts 3 hours, but hey, you can have 8 batteries and keep going a full 24 hours. But they also, in that artificial intelligence, they utilize your behavior, your heart rate, your whether or not you're going upside down at the time, to determine whether or not that might be an exciting piece of feature film that you want to keep as part of your memory stored in the cloud. Behavior monitoring is really the 21st century version of artificial intelligence, and it's going to lead to all kinds of things. So they're talking about that last Forbes story about the Internet of Things and, oh, how we missed it, and, oh, how all this data and the algorithms, it's going to be so hard to be able to sift through all this stuff. Well, not if they monitor you and get a baseline of what your behavior is like, where you go every day, how long you spend on a certain task. And when you start to deviate from that behavior, then bloop, the spotlight shines on you to see what you're doing and why you're doing it differently. All right, back to the story. Recognizing that in some locations, internet infrastructure may not be operational after an attack, or that hackers may have embedded malicious codes into utilities' IT systems during an attack, Radix also calls for the design of a secure emergency network. Oh, that could connect power supplies in critical periods after an attack. The creation of such a network will require new research into advanced security measures, Skynet, as well as innovative technologies to facilitate the rapid connection of key organizations without relying on advanced coordination among them. Isolating affected utilities from the internet would enable recovery efforts to proceed without adversary surveillance or interference, and provides an alternative means for an online coordination that would enable a more orderly restoration of power among affected organizations. I mean, you like the way they're doing this? They are justifying DARPA's intervention into all kinds of homeland security things in the name of national security. I mean, if we had a terrorist attack on the power grid, well, look, we can't launch military operations. And I got to tell you, that's absolutely true. I would bet. If the internet went down, we'd have a big problem. If the power went down that then took all the internet down, we'd have even a bigger problem. But do we really need DARPA involved? Is that really a Department of Defense? A Department of Defense project? I don't know. They should just get some smart networking people on there and fix it. You don't need the military. The military mad scientists. This isn't rocket science, people. Finally, the Radix calls for research and development of systems that can localize and characterize malicious software that has gained access to critical utility systems. And these systems will augment the abilities of skilled cyber first responders, which we already have Cyber Patrol, to triage impacted systems and assist utility engineers with the rapid and safety recovery of power. Like, I just don't understand why we aren't using some sort of intrusion detection for anomalous behavior already on the network that exists and it has for a very long time. I think DARPA needed to be able to justify line item budgeting. All right. Well, you know what? And so the A number one story I had queued up for today, after robots take our jobs, what will we buy in a society without money? I still didn't get there because we only have about 2 minutes left. So that's where we're starting tomorrow. But I guess we'll end up today with this one. Good old China. Chinese researchers unveil a new mind-controlled, yes, I said it, mind-controlled car. Now tell me if that's not disturbing. While we patiently wait for our fully autonomous self-driving cars to go on sale to the general public, our vehicles remain under human control for the time being. But scientists in China have come up with a more futuristic method of getting from point A to point B using special mind-reading headgear, and I'm sure it's very similar to some of the other stuff they've had for remote-controlling drones and keyboards and mice. Their new car can be made to move forward and backward using nothing more than a few concentrated thoughts. A total of 16 sensors and a specially developed brain cap are used to harvest electroencephalogram signals from the mind of the driver, which are then translated into commands for the high-tech car. Researchers behind the project say that the development has taken just 2 years, and it was originally intended to help disabled drivers get around by themselves. But rather than compete with their mind-controlled car, self-driving technology would actually complement the new system. Driverless cars' further development can bring more benefits since we can better realize functions relating to brain controlling with the help of the driverless car platform, says lead researcher Duang Fang from Ningxia University to Reuters. Da, da, da. All right, so there you go. It's Wednesday, so make sure you stick around. Mrs. Alani Clark should be live up next. And then we have the boys from, oh, we have Ron at 7, the boys from New York at 8, Mr. Hal, Anthony, Truth or Talk, and Nick Burnaby. All right,